Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today we're going to be talking about solving some identity breach problems and how to protect your identity a little bit with a company that's actually made some products that's not available on the consumer market yet, but eventually will be. But we're talking to Cameron Williams, the co-founder and CTO of Overwatch ID. Welcome today, Cameron. How are you?
Great, thank you. Glad to be here.
Definitely, and this is a great topic because it's something where we're definitely feeding right into questions people are asking about, how do I protect me? Because what does cybersecurity mean when it's all about big companies and big networks and big data? Doesn't mean anything to the me, it means something to the them. Today we're going to talk a lot about the me and protecting me in the cyber world. So Cameron, first of all, give us a background. Tell us how you got to be where you're at, the CTO and founder of Overwatch, and the progression you got to in your life to be involved with such a high level in cybersecurity.
Yeah, I've been in the cybersecurity field for about 22 years, and I've worked for various companies like MCI and IBM and other companies managing corporate security deployments and response and doing incident response for any breach issues and so on. And the identity security breach vector is definitely near and dear to my heart. I've been working on solving that problem for many years in those faculties. So and that's why I decided that it was a good time to to build Overwatch ID.
Yeah. So tell us about how you started that. What was your first, direction to say, hey, I'm going to solve this problem, make a product here, and then Overwatch ID became the result of that. Tell us about that progression.
Yeah, my background, I've worked in the security field. I worked for companies like IBM, and I actually did work for large websites. I won't name names here to keep them safe, but I've worked on a lot of website breaches, commercial websites, consumer websites, and so on. And that's really kind of, where I got, like, hey, I want to solve this problem for large banks, for large retail organizations, and working to mitigate those breaches and finding out that a lot of those breaches were due to, users being their users or IT administrators that have access to those websites having their credentials, usernames and passwords hijacked and then used to impersonate them and used to infiltrate those environments. I've also worked on building what's called access management systems throughout my career and in various states and to solve that issue specifically for the companies that I worked for setting out with Overwatch ID that my goal was to build a better mousetrap for that identity security breach vector, identity breach vector.
I like the approach of solving this problem to try to get a technical solution, because so often I hear people say, we got to train everybody not to do this. And they just bark, and it sounds like a dog barking at cars that are going by. Train, train, train. Tell everybody not to do this. Tell everybody not to do this. At some point, I like the Overwatch ID solution. You got to make something that says people aren't always going to be perfect. We got to try to help the accidental. And I applaud that. And I think you're in the right direction. Not only do we have to learn, but we have to have something that then tries to help us when we are not so smart in our day-to-day operation. I'm going to take a break for our sponsors. We'll come back, and we want to talk about your comments on that, because I know that you're going to have something to say in that area. We'll be right.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
New Cyber Frontier, talking to Cameron Williams, the co-founder and CTO of Overwatch ID. And before the break, I had went off on, hey, we need a technical solution, technology. We can't just tell everybody. They have to train, learn. If they mess up, they have to go through all kinds of training again. It's kind of like a scolding. When, you know, people are social engineering these spear phishing attacks very effectively and sometimes targeted at an individual. So tell us about, you know, your thoughts on the technology solution versus, you know, the training and the people aspect.
Yeah, I think it's of no fault of their own, right? I don't like to beat up on people, users, right? Because, you know, they're busy, you know, they're doctors in the hospital, right? They're busy trying to save lives. They're not really paying attention to, you know, how often they change their passwords and how complex they are and whether or not they clicked on a bad email in their Gmail, right? Those are things that you know, I think, you know, these campaigns are effective because the spear phishing campaigns and so on are effective because, you know, they're sneaky, right? One of the things that we built in there is, you know, users having access to cloud applications and not having to force them to roll their own credentials. We do that for them. That's one of our things that our platform does. Obfuscating those credentials, if you're not typing one, then a spear phishing campaign can't steal that credential that you're not typing, right? So that's the concept behind what we do on the Overwatch ID platform, I mean, at a 10,000 foot view, if you will. So,
you know, that's what you said is a great thing. We had talked a little bit before about the approach that some of these spear phishers use. Give us a couple examples of how, yeah, they're very sneaky, of how that is that they just kind of even use the human involuntary reactions against us. Tell us about their approach, both on the social engineering side and then the technology, what they're doing internally with their attacks.
Yeah, I think, you know, so a standard spear phishing campaign for an enterprise, so I want to target company ABC for whatever reason to steal their data or encrypt the data to mount a ransomware campaign. There's more than one vector for ransomware campaigns. I'm going to give you an example of stealing a user's identity within an organization and then encrypting, using that to gain access to data and then encrypting that data and sending an email saying you owe me 10 bitcoins if you want the key to this to decrypt that. So number one, if typically bad actors will use social media, unfortunately, well, they'll go out to LinkedIn and look up folks in the, say, the IT administration group, or people that have access to the data that they want to get to. It could be people in finance, could be people in human resources as well, and so on. It could be people that manage medical records within a hospital. All of those people have access to, you know, are kind of quote unquote privileged users. They have privileged access to very sensitive data that's valuable. That bad actor would go out there and find those people that work for company ABC. And then do some research, either via the dark web or other and lots of other methods to look up browsing history of that user, what bank they use, what airline they like to fly, and so on. And let's take the airline example. Say they find that, you know, four of these users like to fly United. sense. So, that user likes to fly United. They don't fly. They prefer to fly United over Southwest and so on. They have the loyalty points that and they're tracking that, and they want to get a free trip to go to Disney World or whatever. So they're paying attention to how many points they have left and to try to get that free ticket to go wherever they want to go on their vacation. That bad actor then sends emails, crafted emails, to those users that like to fly United and say, hey, these, X amount of points from the loyalty program are about to expire. Click this link if you would like to extend them 6 months. And embedded in that link is they actually go to United's website, but while embedded in that link is actually a redirection to a drive-by malware site, which will, by clicking that link, you're authorizing that download of that malware to your endpoint, to your laptop, and there's lots of endpoint protection like Symantec and McAfee and Cylance and other things that do varying levels of degrees of protection for that malware attack. But say it's a zero-day attack, so there's no update for those endpoint protection pieces of software. So it gets by that, installs that malware on your laptop, installs what's called rootkit, and part of that rootkit's called a keylogger. Drop that keylogger on that laptop, keylog everything you type. Get that username and password for that IT administrator that accesses, say, that data store that stores whatever interesting data there is there. So, and then that bad actor then has a back-end channel that looks like a web browsing call from that laptop, gets into that laptop, uses that credential that he keylogged, and then logs into that target's that data store with that sensitive data, effectively impersonating that IT administrator, and then encrypting that data where it's stored, and then sending an email saying, if you want the key to that, to decrypt that, send me 10 bitcoins to this address.
So yeah,
that's kind of the anatomy. That's one anatomy of a successful spear phishing campaign.
So the successful spear phishing campaign doesn't want the user to even know it occurred. Is that correct?
Right. That's correct. That's unbeknownst to the user.
Yeah. So, and I've heard of some where they're actually targeting somebody with they know that their kids go to a certain school, and they say there was an emergency at the school, and they'll have, say, click on the link to find out, some information about this emergency, some details, and actually be something going on, with the school, but they use a current event thing to get people to click on something that it's like involuntary. You're not gonna say, oh, let me go check. You're not thinking when it comes down to your kids or something like that, is kind of the approach they use there.
That's correct. There's also lots of spear phishing campaigns. I mean, they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. There's ones that, figure out that you use Comcast for your internet router or use CenturyLink, and they, we'll generate a clickable link that says, hey, CenturyLink is offering a half price for, if you click this link or something like that. And you're using CenturyLink, so you're like, well, CenturyLink sent this to me because I'm using CenturyLink for my home router or my home internet access. Obviously that makes sense to a lot of people to maybe click that and get that discount, right?
Yeah.
There's obviously lots of incarnations of something that the idea is, get somebody to click on something. How do you do that, right? You fool them into clicking on that link, right?
So tell me a little bit about, we all know there's a lot of things available on the internet, but tell me a little bit about how the research aspects go of somebody looking for that type of information about somebody.
A lot of your browsing history can be retrieved from cookies that are in your browser. And there's lots of websites that download those cookies when you hit them, like social media websites and lots of things. They do that not to try to do anything malicious to you. They're trying to understand what you like to browse for. So say if you're a runner and you like to go to, say you bought a specific pair of running shoes and you buy those every 6 months, that the fact that you go to that website to buy those shoes is going to be embedded in a cookie in your browser. And sites like Facebook and other social media sites interrogate those quote-unquote cookies or those breadcrumbs of trails of where you've been browsing to send you targeted ads for, like, and I'm sure you've seen that when you've gone to your Gmail and on the right side you'll see, you know, that running shoe that you like to buy, or mm-hmm. you know, they do that to, you know, advertise things that are interesting to you, right? That they try to figure out your browsing history and advertise those things. That same information can be used to mount a targeted spear phishing campaign.
Yeah, that sounds like it's a little bit deceiving by our manufacturers and the companies that are selling us stuff. But let's take a break for our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk about that, a little bit more about what Overwatch ID does, and some self-help about how we can protect our identities.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
New Cyber Frontier. We're talking to Cameron Williams, the co-founder and CTO of Overwatch ID, about their products. And we went into some depth there talking before the break about how people mine for data to be able to start their spear phishing attacks on you, their approach, their social engineering. What do you think? I mean, to me, it seems like that all those companies that we buy products from are selling us out. If that stuff is all available and retrieved through that method of spyware, it sounds like to me, through our shopping experience, is there something that can be done, even if it's a social level, to make that less intrusive? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's lots of ways to, you can buy applets and things like that, or even there's lots of free applets. So say Chrome, for instance, you can download an extension to your browser that will try to block any applications from inspecting the cookies off of your browser, for instance. So there are some things that any Joe Schmo can do to protect themselves from having that information exposed about them specifically. Mm-hmm. And they just need to know that those things are available. So from a browser perspective, that's one way to go about protecting your browsing history and things like that from quote unquote that spyware or that, you know, adware campaign.
It's amazing how there's like multi-step things that we all don't know, or, you know, we're just starting to learn about ways that we can protect ourselves, that it almost seems like we should do something on a social level to hold the web vendors accountable on some of those areas. I think I'm a little bit of a proponent for that. I kind of like what the EU is doing with the privacy acts and everything. And I think even going steps further into this this kind of what we are seeing as spyware to gather information could really be a benefit to society.
I agree that there's lots of it's good to see that various governments are actually, you know, taking it upon themselves to, you know, try to you know, force the industry to be better consumers of the, or better stewards of those users' data.
Yeah. Definitely.
And create more privacy measures for those users, right?
Yep, I agree. So at Overwatch ID, though, you make some software solutions that start to give companies, and unfortunately there's no consumer version of this yet, but start to give companies some ways to have a tool to protect themselves or to protect their employees from this. Explain how to the best extent that you can without releasing internal information, how that works on a technology basis.
Yeah, we basically make it so that the user logs into our platform before they make before they try to access very privileged data or very privileged data systems. That could be a cloud application. It could also be internal systems to an organization or to an enterprise. And they don't type when they make access to that server infrastructure, like that IT administrator that I spoke of, where they access applications like Salesforce or AWS Web Console and things like that. They're not actually typing in any more credentials. Our system manages their credentials and their access to those applications on their behalf. If you're not typing a credential, you can't be keylogged, and that can't be used against you to impersonate you and gain access to those systems. That's the 10,000-foot view of what we do. Make sense?
Yeah. Is that a software that sits on a corporate server, sits on 1,000 different people's workstations in the cloud? Explain where your software sits and when does it grab an interface on behalf of the users?
Yeah, we have kind of two form factors. We built our solution to make it really, really easy to install. One of the challenges that we were trying to solve when we started OverWatch ID was a lot of these identity security countermeasures, like privileged access management countermeasures, single sign-on, cloud access security brokering countermeasures, and so on, are kind of, they take a lot of effort to deploy. And we actually wanted to make it really, really easy to deploy our stuff so they can start using it, quote-unquote day two, if you will, instead of day 365 or day 6 months into it, deployment. And we did that by creating what we call our quote-unquote user agent that goes on the user's machine, so their laptop or PC, or in a virtual desktop instance, if that's what they're using to for their daily work, and even mobile apps, mobile devices, like tablets and so on. And so they have that quote-unquote agent on their machine, and then that they now log into our portal, log through that agent, providing that protection to those applications and like Office 365 and Gmail and corporate internal applications, corporate internal data systems, and so on and so forth to do their job during the day.
Yeah. Does this user see this, something they have to log into? Is it just kind of encapsulated into their browser?
No, they'll see a little icon their system tray showing that it's running.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, they log into quote unquote our portal using their corporate username and password and multi-factor authentication. Multi-factor authentication comes in several different formats. If you're familiar with a PIN plus a rolling number, that's called a token. That's one form factor that we have. We can also send what's called an SMS message, which is a text message that goes to your mobile device, and it has a six-digit PIN number. That's pretty common. There's lots of applications that use that same technology. So that's two factors. That's a username and password that you have, and something else that you're receiving on your mobile device and so on that's out of band of that.
Okay.
Confirming that you are who you are, right, as opposed to someone being impersonated. And then you log into our system. We're recording everything you do, and we're allowing you to, and we're presenting you with applications like Salesforce, Office 365, Jira if you're a software developer, so on and so forth. And you just click on those images, and that logs you into those cloud applications, or you click on the name of a database. If you're a database administrator, you click on that link, and it automatically logs you into that database server without, and you have no knowledge of that credential that was used. It's obfuscated to you by on purpose. That's a security feature. If you're not typing the password, it can't be taken from you. Does that make sense?
Okay. So is there two questions I had? First of all, is the your server that it's communicating with, is that something that sits as a proxy on the on your client's business network, or is it in your cloud?
We have two form factors. That's a great question. We have a cloud offering that connects to our clients' organizations. We also have what we call on-premise deployments, which means we actually we package our cloud application into a dedicated package, and we deploy that within organizations if they are, you know, averse to using a cloud application for that offering.
Okay.
The two form factors. One is a cloud offering. One is, you know, on-prem or within the enterprise's data center or domain.
Okay. And the second question, the aggregation of all these passwords on this either proxy server or in your cloud. Sometimes, you know, we hear so much lately about people hacking into databases and getting lots of things all in one place. You know, the concern that adding another database with all the credentials as a place where somebody could hack into to get access to them is, you know, a legitimate concern. Well, how do you address that suggestion or that concern that a company might have about your infrastructure?
Oh, absolutely. And we get that question all the time. Look, I'm a firm believer that there's no piece of software in the universe that's unbreachable, even my own. I would like to think that our software is unbreachable, but the reality is that if someone has a will and enough time and effort and things that are not averse to very high opportunity costs, you know, they will bang on and try to break into things. Just like every other piece of software that we like to think that we do a lot of things to mitigate or make the opportunity cost so high that's not something that will happen. I don't want to go into too much detail about how we do that because, you know, some of that's our secret sauce, but let's just say some of the systems that have been breached, you could think of one key for 5,000 locks, where you said, like, if you break into this database, you get all of these credentials that are stored there. Mm-hmm. We make that wide and flat, if you will. So I don't want to tell you too much about that because, you know, that would be me telling, you know, potentially a bad actor exactly how to try to get into our stuff, but or giving them, you know, you don't want to give anybody any too much information, but we make our solution very, very flat so that instead of one key for 5,000 locks, we have 5,000 keys for 5,000 locks.
Okay, fair enough. So right now you guys have a business platform. Companies want to reach out to you, they can. But if I'm listening and I'm a consumer and I just want your advice from an expert in the area, what would be the top three things I could do to protect my identity with, you know, the common kind of landscape in the virtual world right now?
That's a great question. I've lots of friends that ask me very similar, you know, what would you tell me to do? I think number one is, you know, a lot of the cloud applications that you use, like, you know, your banking, your online banking, you know, Facebook, Gmail, your airline as well that you like to fly, a lot of those applications are offering what's called second factor authentication. What that is that you're authorizing that cloud application like Amazon Prime and so on. You log into that application, and if you go into the security settings, you can turn on the ability for them to send you what's called an SMS message, which is a text message. So when you log in with your username and password on, say, Amazon Prime, and you enable that feature, Amazon Prime will send you what's called a PIN or a six-digit number, which is a second factor to verify that it's actually you and not someone else that somehow got a hold of your Amazon Prime account, your credential. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So that's the first thing I would tell, you know, my buddy is, hey, spend some time Saturday afternoon, take an hour out of your day, and go do that on all the applications that you use.
Okay. So number two.
Number two. Jumped ahead of you there. Yeah, number two is using a password vault one. We actually have a password vault that users can use to store their credentials in as well, their personal credentials and so on. Using a password vault to store your credentials instead of having them written down somewhere or kept in a notepad file or something like that. That's actually being a good steward of your own credentials.
Okay, so if I went on that one and I said, there's a lot of products out there, consumers are inundated, confused. What features would I look for as a strong password vault?
Yeah, number one, I would say is the ability to store your credentials on there in that vault, and obviously be encrypted and have access to that not only from your laptop or through a cloud application you have to log into, but also available on your mobile device, right? So you're not hunting and searching for things, making it more available on both of those form factors. Number two, another good option is that some of these solutions have is to be able to set you reminders. And what I mean by reminders is everybody knows that they should change their passwords, but everybody's busy doing other things, right? It's not first and foremost in their mind. So having a feature that in these password vaults that can you can set a 30-day reminder that says, hey, it's time to go change my LinkedIn password, or it's time to go change my Gmail password. Those types of things, those are actually good things to use. I know they can be a little annoying, but it makes you more secure for sure.
Okay. Any other features you would look for in a password vault?
No, I think those are pretty good. Those would be pretty good features. There are some password vaults that allow you to like click on your password and it will pivot that password automatically paste it into a website for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's more of an ease of use feature that doesn't necessarily make you more secure. That doesn't mean that copy and paste that application just did made you any more secure.
Okay.
But that is an ease of use feature. Maybe that if it's easier to use that vault, at least you're using a vault. So I wouldn't steer you away from that. I would just say it doesn't make you more secure when it does that little pivot for you.
Okay. And a third top three thing that you would recommend people do?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes along the same. So go get a password vault, and then go. And then the third is for all of the applications that you use, don't use the same credential. I think that there's a statistic. I'll give you a statistic of why this is bad. You've probably heard of the Yahoo breach and the LinkedIn breach.
Mm-hmm.
And what was found was a lot of the credentials that were stolen from the Yahoo breach, those credentials were able to be used to get into accounts on LinkedIn.
Uh-huh.
But they were the exact same credential. Does that make sense? So it'd be like, Joe Smith at yahoo.com is Joe's email for Yahoo, and he's using his joesmith@yahoo.com as his login to his Yahoo stuff, but he's also using that same account with the same exact password to log into LinkedIn. That's bad. That unfortunately is not a good thing to do. And so what I would suggest is, use different passwords, different usernames and passwords for each one of these websites, and use a password vault and store them in the password vault so you can remember them properly.
Okay. So just in closing here, I wanted to give you the opportunity to, tell our listeners, who are your customers, who can reach out to you and who, if they wanted your service and how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, a lot of our customers are very, we have customers in the medical field, we have customers in the retail space and finance and so on. It's really this identity breach vector. You can see it affecting retail, banks, and pretty much hospitals and so on. It's very prevalent across the board, and it's not just large companies that have that breach vector. It also affects mid market and SMBs as well. So I think a lot of our customers have the need for this capability, this protection, this mitigation capability. And then if they're interested in talking to us about, you know, a very frictionless, easy to deploy solution to meet that need, they can go to www.overwatchid.com. There's actually a video out there as well about what we do. And it's a little 5-minute draw shop video, which is a pretty neat little video. And it kind of gives you a little, you know, very high level what we do in layman's terms. And they could, you know, say, hey, you know, instead of writing my passwords on sticky notes, you know, there's this option. Go tell the folks in their IT group, hey, I heard of this really cool option called Overwatch ID. You might want to take a look at it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining today, Cameron, and great hearing your perspective and of these solutions that are coming about for our businesses. Thanks a lot, and have a great day.
Thank you. Have a great day. Thank you. Appreciate it.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
You have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.